This is The Guardian.
Hi, Pod fans. Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. It's the Premier League preview special alphabetical team-by-team guide across two podcasts as the greatest league in the world, TM, begins. Today then, Arsenal have bought well, but can they improve on last year? Aston Villa, dark horses for top four or now five. There's an all-new Bournemouth and an all-new Burnley with a not quite as new but presumably still good Brighton in between. Then Chelsea, Lord only knows what will happen there. Roy is still at Palace in 12th. And Everton, well, we all know what will happen there. Finally for this pod, it's Fulham, a nice family club. And apologies to Brentford, who I missed from this intro the first time around. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hello, Max. How are you?
I'm very good. Just say there is a man drilling outside your house, which we may hear during the pod, we may not, but that's that noise.
Yeah, I have relocated my podcasting nerve center to the rear of the building in the hope that there's also a very good chance a large tree could fall through my living room window at some point during the podcast. So if I have to, well, there's not much I can do about it, really, so we'll just deal with it later.
If you could do it at the moment that we discuss Arsenal's new signing Timber, that would actually work. That would work perfectly, wouldn't we? Wouldn't it? At last, Siverton, hello.
Yeah, hello. Continuing on the theme of Timber, I am calling in from the Forest of Dean today, which is, lots of trees. A place of outstanding natural beauty, not a place of outstanding Wi-Fi connection. So we will see if I stay on the line throughout. That'll be exciting.
Hello, Troy Townsend.
Hello, Max. Nothing as exciting to report from me. Yes. That's all I'll say.
So some admin. Fifth place could get Champions League, right? If the Premier League clubs provide one of the top two performances for a nation in this year's Champions League, Europa League and Conference League, the team finishing fifth will earn a Champions League spot in five of the past six seasons. Seven of the past 11, the Premier League would have merited that extra spot. Thank you to Jack, who says, hope you've all had a great summer. Looking forward to next season's predictions. Here's the pod predictions table for the back end of last season. Creditable work that he literally followed the predictions the whole way through. Barry and I were exactly the same because we are just linked at the hip, as he says, just above Wilson. Troy, you were rock bottom.
Cheers.
And Simon Burnton was top, so we're not including him today or tomorrow. Peter says, what's the name for this end of the season, as it's not the business end? Is this the leisure end? The pleasure end? That sounds quite sinister. But anyway, let's settle one thing, which is we'll begin with Arsenal and not AFC Bournemouth. They'll come in the B section. Declan Rice, Kai Havertz, Jurrien Timber in, Granit Xhaka, Pablo Mari, Auston Trusty, who I had not heard of, but hopefully he has a left foot you can rely on, and Ainsley Maitland-Niles have all gone. Lars, can you see Arsenal being better than they were last year?
Well, they're very good. I think the issue here is we come straight into one of my favorite saying, which is you don't have to outrun the bear, you just have to outrun the other campers. And the problem for Arsenal is that it's very difficult to see them finish above City. And that feels like I'm sure Arsenal fans will take that as a slight, and it's not at all. I think in almost any other era, I would be backing this team to win the Premier League. They have so much going for them. They were brilliant last season. They've added over the summer. And the only reason I don't think they'll win it is the sort of general existence of Manchester City. Alas, they do exist. But I have them down as the second best team in the league. I think they will, which is what they were last year, and I think they will still be that.
Troy, have you been impressed with their recruitment? I mean, that's what it feels like. It feels like their squad is better than last year, But it would actually be really hard, especially the way they started last season. The first half of last season, they were absolutely sensational. It's even with a better squad that they might not do as well, partly because the other campers, as Lars said, the other campers might not run as fast as them, but are slightly closer to them than they were last year.
Listen, I think Arsenal fans have got to be excited of, you know, because of the signings they've made, an overpriced Declan Rice. Havertz, I'm going to leave that one. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'll be interested to see what he contributes. Obviously, Jesus is out for a little period of time, and Havertz comes in and plays as a false nine. So rather than having someone up there, but you know, Jesus last season was seemed to be all over the place. So in regards to his positional sense, so it'll be interesting. I still think they'll be as competitive as they was last year. I actually think Xhaka's going to be a miss for them. You know, there was a period of time when Arsenal fans wanted him gone, wasn't there? And he wasn't really contributing to the quality of their play. But the last couple of seasons, given the armband and everything else, he really stepped up. So I think he could be a real miss for them, to be fair. But look, they will be competitive. I've got them in the same place that I put them last year, which I think I put them last year, which probably made me rock bottom. You know, they'll be competitive in those really big games as well. But I've got them down as a third place side just because I think one of those runners are going to come up above them, which I'll reveal later on, of course.
Wow. It's interesting they're going for David Raya, Barry. I mean, I thought Ramsdale was so good last year, and I can't work out if Raya is coming in ahead of him or because Arteta's got a different way of viewing goalkeepers and wants two that are really good in a sort of Clements Shilton style.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that as well. I suspect Aaron Ramsdale was probably quite shocked too. I thought he had a fine season last year. He did have a few ricks, but God, I suspect he will begin the season as number one. And I'd be pretty surprised if he didn't. And I must say it is a signing that has befuddled me slightly. I don't really understand the logic behind it. Obviously, you can never have too many good players, but one of them is going to be dissatisfied and disgruntled, you'd imagine, because they won't be playing. Unless he does a Clements Shilton and alternates, which seems unlikely.
Have the other signings, Barry, befuddled you, or just are you fuddled with them? I'm not sure what the opposite of befuddled is.
No, I'm fuddled. Declan Rice, I think, is hugely overpriced, but obviously you're worth whatever anyone is willing to pay for you. Jurrien Timber, people speak highly of him. I'm not going to claim to have seen much of him playing for Ajax because I don't watch the Eredivisie. Kai Havertz, like Troy, I'm a bit, we'll see. I'd be interested to see if they use Fabio Vieira more. William Saliba is back, obviously, that's big. And the thing with Arsenal, right, they've a 5-point deficit to make up. Can they make up that? Yeah, of course, because they dropped a lot of cheap points last season. The Liverpool, West Ham, Southampton games in particular. And they've quite a gentle introduction into this season. But I was looking at their fixtures and I think it's mid-September to mid-October. They have Man United at home, Everton away. They can't beat Everton at Goodison Park. I think they've lost on their last three visits there. So, you know, it doesn't look tricky on paper, but Arsenal have serious difficulties. Spurs at home, Bournemouth away, Manchester City at home, Chelsea away. We'll see what Arsenal are made of by the end of that, I suspect.
How do you see, Lars, their midfield lining up? Is it sort of Rice, Odegaard, Havertz in games where they think they'll dominate and then Rice, Partey and Odegaard when they have to actually do some defending?
Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing the first version you proposed there. Though maybe that will also hinge on the sort of availability of Gabriel Jesus, because we, of course, we saw him, Havertz, start up front in the Community Shield. I think that's a pretty good suggestion you've made, and I do like the fact that, you know, I sounded a bit negative when you first came to me, but I'm actually not negative. I think they're a really, really good team. I just think if the question is will they win, I'm not sure they can. I like the fact that they've like gone quite big in the transfer market. They were willing to commit those massive funds to bring Declan Rice in. I'm more of a Kai Havertz believer than the rest of the panel, but that might be because I watched him before he went to Chelsea and he was just a lot of fun for Leverkusen. And then he's been sort of part of a pretty, you know, chaotic period of Chelsea's recent history, been moved around positionally a little bit. So maybe Arteta has a better idea how to get the best out of him. I also have a slight bias towards sort of lanky and very technical players. That's always just aesthetically, I just like them. But I like the fact that Arsenal have gone quite big. They could have at the end of last season gone, well, we're great again, fantastic, but and just gone complacent there. But they've kind of looked to build on that season. And the other thing is, they were able to keep pace with City for a very long time with one of the youngest squads in the league. And all of those young guys are a year older. And there's no reason at all to suggest they're going to be any worse. So there's so much positive stuff going for Arsenal going into the season. I'd be very excited if I was an Arsenal supporter.
So I have them third, Barry.
First.
Wow.
First.
Champions.
Yeah. You didn't have a positive thing to say about them a minute ago, and now they're first.
Yeah, I know.
I thought it was quite positive. Look, the thing is, we're doing these, the window's still open. You know, Julian Lopetegui left Wolves yesterday. West Ham might be about to lose Paqueta. It's hard to make predictions. I think they can make up a 5-point deficit for various reasons. I have them first.
Lars?
Second.
Troy?
Third.
There we are.
Okay. So can I just say, Max, bear in mind, if I said last year Liverpool to finish outside the top four, Chelsea 12th, you'd have had me committed. So, you know.
Well, I mean, that is the point. If I'd said, well, you know, Leeds will probably bring in Big Sam for the last four games. Exactly. Aston Villa 7th. They brought in Moussa Diaby from Leverkusen for £51 million. Pau Torres in from Villarreal. Yuri Tielemans is coming from Leicester for nothing. Ashley Young's gone to Everton. Marvellous Nakamba to Luton. And Wesley to Stoke. Say it quietly around Jordan Jarrett-Bryan, but it's an exciting time to be a Villa fan, Troy, isn't he? And they've signed well. They've got a brilliant manager. The sky's the limit. What is the limit? Fifth is the limit. What's the limit?
I'm excited for this Villa side. And like you've just noted there, Max, they've been very, very shrewd in the transfer market. And being very shrewd is what the manager does. And he's taken them to a level that I think is probably beyond the Villa fans' expectations to start with as he's come in. You wait to see where I've put them in the league this year, then there'll be a shot. But for me, I think they need to get some cover for Ollie Watkins, some good cover for Ollie Watkins. I think he'll score goals again, no doubt. But just in case, you know, as the season goes on, he picks up an injury or it becomes a tiring season, I think if they could get a good backup player for him, I think they've got the perfect squad at the moment. And I'm quite excited to see them. Tielemans is, you know, to get him on a free, and I know there were loads in for him, it's an outstanding signing. He hasn't got to move very far. He hasn't really, you know, he hasn't got to do anything but perform in the way that he was performing during his good times at Leicester. And Pau Torres comes in and, again, a really good defender. And it will be interesting to see if it is Mings he matches up with or if he changes the style of play. But I'm excited for this Villa side.
With that level of positivity, I'm expecting first at the end of this bit. Tell us about Moussa Diaby, Lars.
Oh, he's very fast. And I think he'll be a very useful player for Unai Emery. I think he'll do... I mean, this is kind of simplistic because, of course, he comes from the same club in Germany, but I think he'll do a lot of the things they're kind of hoping Leon Bailey would do, but that Leon Bailey just haven't done consistently, right? To be that sort of very speedy threat, can play both in a wide area. You can probably stick him up front. You know, Emery likes to play. You know, we saw him at Villarreal use a sort of 4-4-2, but with one of the strikers being basically a winger who pulls wide all the time. I think in that role, Diaby should be very well suited. You know, he's rapid. And no, I think he's someone who has the toolkit to make an impact in the Premier League. And like Troy, I like the squad a lot. There's a lot going on there. And it seems like such a great place for Unai Emery to be because it's a club that's big enough and has enough resources that they can bring him some very good players to work with. But he maybe sort of escapes the sort of worst of the glare and the pressure and the expectation of the very top clubs. I have them a couple of places lower in the table than I suspect their fans would like me to. But I think they're very well settled, have a lot of really good players. And if like last season, like you said, Max and Barry, if the teams that are in quote-unquote bigger or above them in the table could occasionally can fall massively on their face and things can go wrong. And if that happens, I think Villa are very, very well situated to kind of sneak in and grab a place higher in the table.
And Barry in the Conference League, which you've got to say they've got a really good chance in.
Yeah, obviously Unai Emery's pedigree in Europe is second to very few, if anyone, and I suspect that may affect their league position, and I don't think Villa fans will particularly care. I think they'll want to have a right good go at winning the Europa Conference League. Emery has revolutionised that club in, what, 7 or 8 months, less, and you wonder how much better can they get. I think they could improve, but not particularly move up the table, and that's because I don't expect Chelsea to be anywhere near as bad this season as they were last season. But we used to talk about a big four and then it was kind of a big six. Now I think when you put Newcastle in the mix, we have a big seven, and I think Villa and Brighton are not could establish themselves as a, you know, make it a big eight, a big nine. I used to talk a lot about there being an awful lot of very bad teams in the Premier League. But this season, I think there's going to be more good teams than bad teams.
Do you want to round it up for a Big Ten, Barry?
That would be nice, wouldn't it? I mean, the interesting point of that is presumably they will take points off each other, right? And the question is, can they take points off City as opposed to just all beating each other and then City run away with it? But we'll get to Manchester City. We'll get to City tomorrow. League positions. Troy.
Fourth.
Wow. Lars?
Wow. Oh, my days. Well, so this is weird because I'm also very positive about them, but I have actually put them eighth, which is lower than they'll expect.
How's that positive, Lars?
because of what Barry just said, a lot of good teams. I think that it's I think they're really good, but I think there are teams that are even better. But if they fall over, then you know, Villa will be there.
It's the good teams, Barry.
Yeah, I think they'll be better than last season, but I have them in the exact same spot, seventh.
I have them sixth. Okay, then Bournemouth, then 15th last year. Gary O'Neill did so well, they got rid of him. They brought in Andoni Iraola as manager. Also come in Justin Kluivert from Roma, Romain Favre from Lyon, Milos Kerkez from AZ Alkmaar, and Hamad Traore. Jefferson Lerma and Jack Stacey have gone. They've lots of players who I only really expect Lars to have heard of, and a manager who I think others may know about, but probably didn't know about until he was recruited, with all due respect to the rest of the panel. Lars, is this the all-new tick-a-tacker Bournemouth?
Well, so Sid did a really good piece on Iraola this summer, and he seems like a really fun guy. I mean, there's a quote he apparently once said that, as a coach, he prefers too much chaos to too much organization, which I think is amazing. That is what I want from a Bournemouth manager, or indeed just... I'm much more excited about seeing their team this season than I was this time last season. If you look at the squad, I think after and Mr. Foley came in and bought the club, they seem to want to build sort of a youthful, attacking, vibrant team. And they brought in a coach who's done very, very well in Spain with Rayo Vallecano to do that. Like you say, you make jokes about, you know, the names being slightly unknown, but they're interesting characters. I mean, I think you should remember the fullback Kerkez from AZ from the West Ham games in the Conference League last season. He was very lively from a fullback for AZ. I do worry. So this is inside of me, Max. I have a sort of a football romantic and a haggard old cynic, and they're just kind of fighting. Then they're punching each other constantly. That's kind of my internal process when I'm looking at these things. My concern is that trying to take Bournemouth, who did stay up but were not amazing last season, I think on the sort of the expected goals models had them as one of the worst, if not the worst teams in the league, trying to take that and make them into a sort of chaotic attacking fun machine, I think that's an incredibly difficult thing to do, and I think there are a lot of things that can go wrong if you try to do it. So I worry a little bit that it might not work for them, but I really hope it does, and I'm very much looking forward to watching the team.
Any strong thoughts, Barry and Troy? Start with you, Troy.
I kind of hear what Lars saying. I think they could be really hit and miss, and I suppose it's how much hit they are or how much miss they are. They want to create a new...
That's a general guide for most of these teams.
Starting well, obviously, is massively important because you know, you want the fans on their side. You want the new manager to have that bounce. You want the players to enjoy playing in the Premier League. But it also can be very difficult. So, listen, it's one of those where the expectation must be quite high because of the new manager and the type of players that he's bringing in. But the Premier League is unforgiving. So you're right, they didn't pull up many trees last year, although, you know, you still got to say that they did very well. But it's a competitive league. It's a competitive league. So I'll be interested to follow their progress.
Would have been another good time for that tree to fall down. Just try said that, Baz.
The only thing I would add is if you said to me now, you are only allowed watch one Premier League team's games throughout the season, it would be Bournemouth. I'm very excited to see what they're like. Almost entirely on the strength of that Sid Lowe article about Iriola, which I recommend everyone dig out and read. Easy to find.
I have them 16th, Troy.
14th.
Lars.
Yeah, with a heavy heart, I've sent them down. I put them in 18th, but it's one of those things I really hope I'm wrong about.
Barry?
11th.
Wow.
All right.
Oh, my days.
That article, you know, that Sid article is great, isn't it? That's really good. All right, that'll do for part one. Brentford starts part two.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. So the live tour tickets available in November across the UK and Ireland. London on the 13th, Bristol on the 14th, Manchester the 15th, the residency in Dublin 20th and 21st, Brighton on the 22nd. A host of your favourite Football Weekly regulars and me and Barry, tickets on sale. Go to theguardian.com/FWTour23. I don't know how well tickets are selling, but if we start doing really long promos, you'll find out they're not going as well as we hoped they would. But presumably, very few tickets remaining. Brentford then came ninth last year. They brought in Nathan Collins from Wolves, Kevin Schade from Freiburg, and Mark Flecken, also from Freiburg. A double swoop. Lovely part of the world, Freiburg, if you're looking for a mini break. Pontus Janssen's gone to Malmo, and Mads Bistrup. Can't say I noticed him a lot last year, but he won't be seen in a Brentford shirt. Major talking point, Baz, is that Ivan Toney's unavailable until January. And that is, I mean, apart from, of course, Ethan Pinnock still being the mainstay, no Toney until January is big.
Yeah, it's massive, obviously. I think his absence and the fact that Thomas Frank is one of, I think, several managers in the Premier League who would be coveted by other clubs, you know, quite a lot of these clubs we're previewing will not have the same manager at the end of the season as they do now. Maybe half, maybe more. And Thomas Frank will be, you know, can Brentford hold on to Thomas Frank? He seems happy enough there for the time being. As for Toney's absence, we don't have a huge amount to go on, but he missed the last three games of last season. And in those three games, Brentford scored 6 goals. They beat West Ham, they beat Spurs, and they beat Man City. That's not bad going without Ivan Toney. So they may well be all right.
He's holding them back. Lars, your prescient thoughts on Brentford?
I just acknowledging that I foolishly thought they would have like second season syndrome last year. So in acknowledgement of that, I'm going to say, listen, they're such a well-run club on and off the pitch in terms of, you know, how they go about their business. Thomas Frank has done a brilliant job. I'm sure they'll be completely fine. I've knocked them down a couple of places from last season just because they're missing Toney for so long. But another season of being totally fine in mid-table is a real, real achievement for Brentford, all things considered, and that's what I think they'll do.
I have them 11th, Lars.
12th.
Crystal Palace always 12th, come on. Troy?
10th.
Barry?
10th.
All right, Brighton then came 6th last year. They brought in João Pedro from Watford, Bart Verbruggen from Anderlecht, Igor from Fiorentina, and James Milner from Liverpool, and Mohamed Dahoud from Dortmund, both on a free. Alexis McAllister's gone, as has Robert Sanchez. Moises Caicedo may or may not go. We don't know yet. So that is quite a lot of upheaval, Barry. But they've had upheaval before, and we've all gone, well, that means they'll struggle. But, you know, do you think they'll be better than last year but come lower than last year?
I do, actually, yeah. I do. I mean, I found that doing the top half of this table so difficult. Really, really difficult. And we could all look like absolute morons by the end of the season. But the bottom half, not so much. That kind of did itself, really. But yeah, the top half. So, sorry. Look, as you say, Brighton have had upheaval in the past. They've always seemed to have contingency plans. They're, you know, like a good chess player. They're 5 or 6 moves ahead of everyone else. If I was Moyes Caicedo, I'd be concerned maybe about a move to Chelsea. It doesn't always work out, people from Brighton moving to Chelsea. In fact, it often goes horribly wrong. I expect them to do well and finish several places lower.
Lars, they might bring in Mohamed Kudus as well, which I was like, I saw him as someone going to a bigger club than Brighton. So that's a really interesting move for them.
Super fun player, who will no doubt make an already very, very watchable team even more watchable. So that'll be tremendous. And I think it was just a brilliant feat of coaching from Roberto De Zerbi last season to come in mid-season and make them just implement his style very quickly and make them do this sort of funky thing of enticing people to come on and press them and then play through them and all that sort of stuff. They were really one of the most fun teams to watch in the league last year. But without wanting to throw a wet blanket on it, I really enjoyed the Brighton story last season. But I went on to one of these websites where you can divide the season into segments by dates and sort of see what the results between these two dates were to find out what...
you know how to live.
Yeah, what exactly... Well, some of us has to write preview material for the next season, Max. And it turns out, like, unless I've done something horribly wrong, during the period Roberto De Zerbi was in charge of the team last season, they were only 8th in the league. You know, there were 7 teams that collected more points than them, and they conceded more goals than Leicester, which seems bad. So as much as they deserve all the praise they got, because they were tremendously fun to watch, and they're doing it on a small budget, and all the things that we've said over and over again, I believe in them, those things passionately. But you know, they didn't actually take that many points. Expected goals stats were better, as they often are with Brighton, suggesting there's some unfulfilled potential there. Maybe be a bit more clinical in front of goal. But now, of course, they've got to play in Europe as well, which adds an extra burden to this, with some really important players having left. So again, I'm with Barry. Like, I'm not down on Brighton. I don't think they'll crash and burn or anything. I think they'll still be a great watch. They'll still do very well and still punch above their weight. But I do have them a couple places lower than last season.
Last season, they beat Man U twice. They beat Liverpool, drew with them in the league, knocked them out of the cup, beat Chelsea twice, beat Arsenal away, drew with Manchester City. But they also got beaten home and away by Fulham. And we all remember that absolute pounding they got from Everton. So they need a bit, they're, you know, a bit up and down. And obviously, we all have dreadful days at the office, but the results can be a bit weird and unpredictable.
Barry said this about Thomas Frank. I think De Zerbi leaving is a risk factor here. I think if there are certain jobs around Europe, if they become available, he would be very, very high on their list. And let's say they wrestle a little bit with the added burden of Europe this autumn. Let's say De Zerbi is maybe frustrated that some of the big players left. I'm sure he's very committed to the cause and grateful to the club for giving him a chance in the Premier League and all this sort of stuff. But if things are a bit frustrating there the next few months and suddenly a big job comes up, you know, that could be a challenge for them as well.
I've got them 9th, Troy.
In the exact same place as me.
And me.
There you go.
And me.
So there's nothing more that needs to be said. I've never said I've excited about a Brighton team before, but what they did last year, I think everyone would have, you know, the introduction of Matoma, Jan Ferguson coming in up front, Solly March having a really good season as well. But then Lars pulls out that little bit of data there and he presumes anything that I wanted to say. The players that they've lost are going to be really important that the people that are going to take their, the players that take their place hit the ground running. I'm excited about young Pedro, but from Lars's analysis, we've got to look at what they do defensively, and they've got to be better defensively if they are going to grow. I'll be interested to see where James Milner slots in. Does he slot in as a centre midfield player? Does he play fullback? I'll be interested to see where he slots in. But yeah, the mitigating circumstances of the manager that could up and leave and Europe are things that we have to take seriously. But yeah, I'll pick them in at ninth, as we all have done, and we'll see how they get on during the course of the season.
Burnley came top of the championship. They brought in Zeki Amdouni from Basel, James Trafford from Man City, Jordan Bayer from Mönchengladbach, Dar Ogier from West Brom, and Michael Obafemi from Swansea. Ashley Barnes, what a shame, is no longer there. And Nathan Teller's gone back to Southampton, a significant player for them last year. Liam says, is Barry looking forward to predicting Burnley's relegation from the Premier League once again?
I have not predicted the relegation from the Premier League this season. I think they'll do quite well. I hear there's a young, wet behind the ears whippersnapper named Andros Townsend training with them, possibly with a view to signing. That could rocket them into the Champions League places if they get him after his release from Everton for a crime he didn't commit. I expect Burnley to be fine. I think there's some great players. Josh Cullen, Republic of Ireland international in midfield, he's probably been Ireland's best player, which is, it's a low bar, but over the past couple of seasons. Jordan Bayer seems like a very exciting prospect in at centre-back. And Anas Zerouri is a left-winger who's a Moroccan international. I think he will do well. Vincent Kompany seems to know what he's doing. There's a documentary about Burnley's promotion season on at the moment, all episodes available, and I just can't bring myself to watch it. I've seen too many of those fly on the wall documentaries that are terrible.
I was about to say, I don't need to see any more players stretching and just like fist pumping as they meet each other of a morning. I can't bring myself to do that.
If you want to get a real insight into a football club, you've got to watch them, haven't you? Yeah? Or you just don't care.
I mean, well, but yeah, but once you've seen one, you've basically seen them all, haven't you?
Well, no. Some of them are good.
That's true. The Sunderland Till I Die was great.
But even the Sunderland one that was done years ago when Peter Reid was manager was brilliant. And it's because they failed. They got relegated. No one's interested in success. You want to watch a team bomb. And even as a fan, no, you know, albeit a sort of nominal fan, no one's interested in a PR exercise where the team does really well and wins lots of trophies. You want to see it's what starts out as a vanity project and then everything just falls apart. That's a documentary I want to watch.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Burnley, Lars.
I think they're good. I'm slightly baffled by how well it worked out for them last season, because that's, you know, having played dice ball in the Premier League for years and years, then getting relegated, not really having the budget to completely transform the squad. They added some people, yeah, but they didn't do that much. And then bringing in a sort of young manager who's, you know, influenced by Pep Guardiola and wants to play more possession football and stuff. Like, on paper, that should have been a disaster. Like, that's one of those things that you just look at that, no, that's not a good idea. And then they just run away with the league and play amazingly well. 101 points, was it? Just 3 defeats all year. Unbelievable stuff from Burnley last year. Just and literally unbelievable. I would not have believed this if you'd have told me that was going to happen. So, and I think I don't watch the Championship every weekend, so I'm not an expert on them at all. But just on the back of that, I'm more than happy to give them the benefit of the doubt here, and I think they'll stay up.
Where's the benefit of the doubt put them in the table for you, Lars?
It has put them in 16th.
Troy?
Maybe a bit of biased here, but I do think they will have a really good season. I think he's a manager who... I had the privilege of interviewing him end of April, a week after they'd gone up. And I would say that there wasn't a massive amount of excitement in his voice. He expected to do it. He backed himself as a manager and what he was going to bring to that football club and what he did bring to the football club. But it was just like work as normal. And I think that's how he's going to approach the Premier League. So I have gone 12th.
Yes, I've there's four teams in the Premier League beginning with B, and I have them 9th, 10th, 11th and 12th. 12th is where Burnley is. Just a hypothetical question here. If, I don't know, one of our panellists had a son who was perhaps about to sign for Burnley because he's a free agent, would he in any way be putting him off because you couldn't face the old schlep from London to Turf Moor every second weekend?
Come back
to the Palace.
Wherever it takes us, wherever it takes us. I'll be delighted if he stays in the Premier League. That's the most important thing. Yeah.
Oh, I see. It's Troy you were referring to. Look, Ian is still only, only 18 months old, Barry. He's not sleeping through yet. Give him a chance. I've got them 11th. Chelsea, 12th last year. Christopher Nkunku is in. He's injured out for, 3.5 months? Axel Disasi, if I pronounced that correctly. Nicholas Jackson, Leslie Ugochukwu and Robert Sanchez are in. Outs.
I mean, everybody.
We don't have time. We don't have time. Havertz, Mount, Kovacic, Koulibaly, Pulisic, Mendy, Loftus-Cheek, Ampadu, amongst others. Last year, Troy was such a disaster. They haven't got Europe. They have got Pochettino. I think this is the hardest to predict what will happen of all the teams. Absolutely no idea.
I absolutely agree as well. Listen, that sold loan list is massive. Obviously, they needed to trim their squad. Someone has finally said, look, we need to get these out if we're going to get some in. I think they've made some very shrewd signings. I think there are potentially another free signings that they may make if the rumours are true. And I think they have to make those signings because at the moment, I think Poch has got an incredibly difficult job pulling this team together to make some kind of sense out of it for this season. Listen, yes, he's a great manager. He hasn't managed in the Prem for a few years. He's now taken over a mess. And yes, when he first came to Spurs, you could say that, but there was a semblance of a squad that he could work with. And, you know, he outed a few, including my son, and made sure that he got things the way that he wanted to. I'm not sure you can do that in the period of time that he's had and the period of time that he will have as he's bringing in new players. So I absolutely agree. I think this is the most difficult one to kind of place, you know, because of that. I mean, I've been watching Jackson during the summer and he looks like the established number nine that they need. But there's something about that number nine shirt that weighs heavy at Chelsea. So we'll have to see if he comes through that. It's an interesting one. It's a really interesting one. And I'm trying to hold court on Chelsea until we find out what their squad will eventually look like. But yeah, I've placed them in a position that doesn't take them any higher or any lower than last season.
Doesn't holding court mean you sort of, you know, you're
pontificating?
Not in my world. Not in my world.
So bad. For months and months, Troy is just going to stand at speaker's corner talking about Chelsea until he knows if Pochettino can get a tune out of them. Barry?
Yeah, I agree. They're a difficult one. I think talk of the problem and the mess Pochettino has inherited is greatly exaggerated. You know, he knows what he's doing. And if you've got 35 players and you only want 22 in your squad, then it's very easy. Just bomb out 13 of them and say, right, you're not part of the group. This is who I want to train with. And it's problem solved. And those guys go and train. It's brutal, but that's what you need to do. Apparently, Nicholas Jackson has been burning it up in pre-season for whatever that's worth. I expect Pochettino to get a great tune out of Mikhailo Mudryk, who you know was parachuted into this shit show and didn't get much of a chance to shine. I think the fact they're not in Europe is massive, and I expect them to do pretty well.
Yeah, agree. I'm high on Chelsea ahead of this season. I completely acknowledge the problems that Troy have listed that Pochettino and his team has to deal with. But I actually think one of the things that we kind of ignored or didn't notice, because it was such a dumpster fire last season, like it was all bad, it was just a total mess. You kind of forget that. I really think a lot of those young players they brought in are brilliant. And I think there are a few potential like proper stars there. And I think now that they've trimmed the squad and Pochettino has come in, who has a history of doing well with young players, I think that's set up for them to make improvements. And so it is sort of your... I'm kind of backing slightly intangible elements here, but I think if you can get a handful of those young players who can take a step up in a similar vein to what we saw with Arsenal squad last season, maybe not that far up, but there are a lot of young players here who can really, really become very, very good, I believe. And I think Pochettino is a good man to lead them. I think not being in Europe, like Max Barry said, is a huge advantage. So I'm pretty positive on Chelsea, really.
I just think if they, let's say they don't get the targets they want, particularly they're obviously looking at their centre midfield and go, they need to bulk their centre midfield up because it's now paper thin. If they don't get those targets, then what do they turn to? You know, so it's almost like you're kind of, if they get the players that they want, and I think it's well publicised, the players that they want, I can see them actually, like you said, with all the no European football, etc., and a manager who understands how to gel and put squads together. But if they don't get those targets, I just worry that they've not got, how crazy is this, that they've not got a big enough squad to now compete. So, yeah, they're a roll of the dice for me, Chelsea. They're just an absolute roll of the dice. And I suppose we'll know more in the first month or 6 weeks.
I rolled the dice and got 7, which is hard, but that's where I'm putting them. 7th, Barry.
I rolled the dice and got 4.
Wow.
Lars?
I thought I was going to... Good Lord. I've got them 5th, and I thought that was going to be higher than people, but 4, wow.
And Troy, you had them 6th, did you?
8 for me.
8th. Right. All right. Well, that'll do for part 2. Part 3, we'll do Crystal Palace to Fulham.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to part 3 of the Guardian Football Weekly. Crystal Palace then, 12th every season, came 11th last year. They brought in Mateus Franca and Jefferson Lerma. Wilfried Zaha has gone to Galatasaray. Roy Hodgson remains, Barry. How nice is that?
He does. And I found it quite endearing. He was doing a press conference the other day and he was asked, I think, about the possibility of losing Michael Olise, and just seemed to know nothing whatsoever about it. <You know? laughs> Apparently Chelsea are after him. I think Palace would probably be fine, but as we record, they could still lose Olise, they could lose Joachim Anderson, they could lose Cech Decore, and they could lose Mark Gehi. They could lose some, one, none, or all of those players. And that, I suspect, will have a massive, massive bearing on how they do this season. Odson Edouard still has yet to convince. I don't know, is it 2-3 years since he moved from Celtic? Still not convinced by him. I have to say, Jordan Ayew slightly changed my opinion of him with his performances, I think, in the second half of last season. I always thought he was just garbage, but I've started to see what he brings to the Palace party. And I think it remains to be seen whether it was the right decision to give Hodgson a deal for this season. I suspect he won't be there by the end of the season. I think he may get sacked or leave. But I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be fine. I'm just not sure where their goals are going to come from. And I don't think the loss of Wilf Zaha is that big a deal. He's been a great servant for Palace, but they have a couple of pretenders who are ready to step up to his position as talisman, you know, Eze, obviously, and Olise if he stays.
I think Palace might have problems this season. I agree with Barry, where do their goals come from? Because none of those three players, you include Ayew in that, Mateta and Edouard, score goals in abundance. They've lost, they could lose Michael Olise's creativity with the rumours again, Chelsea, Man City. Apparently they're not happy with Chelsea in the way that they've approached, but he's injured anyway, so he doesn't start the season. You have to say they'll miss Wilf's contribution to goal scoring because, again, the last few seasons he's upped his levels there and someone needs to come in and replace those goals. I worry for them at the back because, again, as Barry has identified, he's really done his homework. A couple of those could go. And again, if they get certain bids for Anderson or Gueye, they go, who do they replace them with? Because there's nothing readily available within the club to replace those two centre-backs. So I think they've got work to do in the transfer market. Does that depend on selling players? I'm not too sure. So Roy's got a big job on there. But you've got to say that he actually did a very good job when he came back in. And, you know, not only stabilised them, but a Roy Hodgson team that was creative and that, you know, was scoring goals and kind of exciting was a nice thing to have. I must point out as well, James McArthur, who I thought was one of the most, as a servant and as a dedicated player, was amazing for Crystal Palace and got released at the end of the season, retired from football this week. Just a great all-round professional footballer, and I think deserves a mention in here as well. So I am concerned, but again, the place that I've put them kind of says, well, you're not really concerned, are you? So we'll see.
Where are they? Third. Where are you putting them?
You're taking a mick out of me, but you're accepting fourth for Chelsea. I just can't believe it. I've got them just below their normal place of 12th. I've got them 13th.
Well, I've got them 12th. As where they should be, Lars.
I got them 11th. I basically agree with everything that's been said. So just not going to say much. Sort of Roy Hodgson, old school Roy Hodgson off the ball organization, plus Eze and Olise doing the attacking things, that should be totally fine. If they lose either Eze or Olise, I worry about them creativity wise, but should be fine.
Everton then, 17th last year. They brought in Ashley Young and Arnaut Danjuma at the second attempt. Moise Akeen, Ellis Sims, Yerry Mina, and of course Andros Townsend aren't there. Their last season at Goodison Park. It doesn't seem great, Barry, does it?
No. At the end of last season, Sean Dyche said, you know, they stayed up just about. And Dyche said, there's a massive amount of work to be done. The club need to be at the top end of the market. None of that work has been done, you'd have to say. They are facing a hearing before an independent commission in October for alleged breaches of financial fair play rules. So they could conceivably get a points deduction, which won't help them. Their cumulative losses over the past 4 years of 430 million. Like, you think of all the players they bought. Remember, they were just buying one scampering midfielder after another, paying huge amounts of money, and none of them seem to work out. So even if they do get transfers done, and with the greatest respect to Ashley Young, you know, he's getting on a bit now. Arnaut Danjuma.
He's only 38, Barry. What are you talking about? He's only 38.
Arnaut Danjuma was supposed to go there in January and then did a last second U-turn and went to Spurs instead. So he's clearly not really enamoured with being at Everton. You know? I'd be interested to see what kind of reception he gets. You know, Seamus Coleman, who I won't hear a bad word said about, but like, when he recovers from injury, he's probably still going to be first choice right back. Like, crikey.
Sounds like you just said a bad word about Seamus Coleman.
Well, he's old, you know, he's old. He's been there for, 17 years or something. You know, he's the James McArthur or the Joel Ward of Everton. Now, the one little joker they have, can they, or will they even try to, when he recovers from injury, get a tune out of Dele Alli? That could be interesting.
Lars, is this the year of Neil Mopai?
Wow, I think I've given up on that one. You know, I was a Mopai believer for a while, but you know, not sure about that. I mean, he runs a lot. That's good. And he's very annoying to play against, which I think is an underrated thing in football. But just a lot of negativity around Everton. I get that. I don't necessarily disagree, but again, me having run wild with this feature of looking at league tables from various dates to other dates, Like, after Daesh took over, they picked up, by my reckoning, 21 points in 18 games, which over a full season puts them at 44 points, which is fine. Keeps them up. Last season would have actually put them 12th. So if Daesh just kind of cracks on and does what he does, I'd back them to stay up. Now, bigger picture, as you guys have alluded to, the picture for Everton is not great. The financial situation, not ideal. But I think for now, they just need to survive. And I think with Daesh in charge, you'd expect them to do that.
Yeah, I think Daesh is the key there, isn't he? I mean, I have them 15th purely because of Sean Daesh. You know, they've got a sort of tireless midfield, which will run a lot and won't be nice to play against. And if, you know, if they can get Goodison, especially the last season of Goodison, I mean, Troy, you know the fans better than the rest of us, but they can just sort of get that vibe, then I think they'll be okay.
Can I just say the key, yes, is the manager, but the key is keeping Dominic Calvert-Lewin fit and him trusting his body. If he's fit, they're a different beast altogether. And with Danjuma coming in as well, I can see them actually dovetailing very well. If he's not fit, they have a problem with scoring goals again. And that is a bit, I mean, you mentioned Neil Mopay and, you know, spending £15 million on someone that doesn't score goals is not a good fit for Everton at the moment. And yes, he does run around a lot. Yes, he does create a little bit of havoc, but they don't need that. They need goals. And Dominic Calvert-Lewin is that one person who should be able to provide them with enough goals to give them the safety that they need. But there's conversations about a couple of their players as well. You know, apparently they're leading the Maguire bid, but you know, West Ham have just had another are in for him as well. Onana could potentially be going. I think that would be a very bad move for them, you know, in regards to who they replace him with. Dwight McNeil had a really good season last season. I think with the optimism of maybe having a settled front three, and like you said, that kind of workaholic midfield, I think that's what Daesh will base his kind of whole structure on. But if something happens and Calvert-Lewin spends as much time out as he had in the last 2 years, then there's a massive problem for Everton there. Massive problem.
I was just going to say, like, just Mopay. I mean, you could pick me to play for Everton. I'd run around and create havoc.
I think you'd run less.
You want me in the side? No.
For how long would you run around?
I'd give it a good 3 minutes, Troy. I've been doing a lot of walking the past week or two, so I could certainly stroll around for a full 90.
Right, I've gotten 15th. Lars, where have you gotten?
14th.
Barry?
Relegated, 18th.
Troy?
16th.
All right, let's do Fulham then. Came 10th last year. They brought in Calvin Bassey from Ajax, former Rangers man, and Raul Jimenez from Wolves. Joe Bryan and Shane Duffy have gone. Mitrovic seems to want to go to Saudi. Willian signed a new deal, but wants to go to Saudi. Marco Silva doesn't want to go to Saudi Arabia. It doesn't, I mean, I put them 10th, but that's because I wasn't thinking. It looks like it might not be a great year for them, Barry.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. But they're sort of towards the bottom of my table, and their okayness will almost certainly be down to the fact that there'll be quite a few teams that are worse than them. I'm not expecting much from them. I think signing Raul Jimenez is a huge gamble because, as good as he used to be, let's face it, he has not been half the player he was since he had that awful head injury. And, you know, it's not a huge surprise, but that's a big gamble. If they can get him firing, that could be huge. I mean, a sulking Mitrovic, if he stays, is not much of a Mitrovic. And even if he leaves, during his ban last season, I think they lost 4-1-4, so that's, you know, they can cope without him. They scored 13 goals during his ban. Can they keep hold of Palina? He's highly sought after. He's a brilliant player. He's a great find for them. He's out with a shoulder injury at the moment, so he'll miss the start of the season, whichever club he's at. And up front, they have a great prospect in Jay Stansfield, although I meant to check, has he gone on loan anywhere yet? He was on loan at Exeter last season and did really well. He's only a kid, so will he get to step up? Or will he get the chance to step up? I don't know, but I suspect Fulham will be okay.
Troy, Lars, I want a minute of thoughts on Fulham, and then that is our work done. Troy?
Personally, I think Mitrovic will be a massive loss because despite what they did when he was out, his consistency of goals over the last two seasons is something that's very difficult to replace. And Jimenez, as Barry has quite rightly stated, has not been the same player. There are a couple of people that they want to get, and I know Damari Gray is one of them. There was talk of Callum Hudson-Odoi, although that's gone quiet now. I do think they'll be all right, but I agree with Barry about what's below them is probably worse than what they are.
Yeah, at the risk of incurring the very mild wrath of both Archie and guest producer Sammy, I'm just not super high on Fulham. I don't fully trust what happened last season. They finished very high on the table. Underlying numbers not quite as convincing, and it's got a faint sort of whiff of second season syndrome about it, to be honest, especially if Mitrovic leaves. But I will acknowledge that that's based on mostly sort of irrationality on my side. But having said that, I have put them 13th in my thing, because I don't think they'll fall away enough to get themselves relegated. But I do have them in that sort of bracket of, if Mitrovic leaves and they have a couple of unfortunate injuries or something like that that go against them, it could get a bit iffy, but should be fine.
Baz, where have you got them?
14th.
Troy?
15th.
Okay. Troy and Lars, because you're not here tomorrow, need to hear your top five and your bottom three. Go on then, Lars.
All right. So my top five, I've got Chelsea 5th, as you'll note. I have United 4th. I have Liverpool 3rd. Arsenal 2nd, and you'll be surprised to hear, Manchester City, top of the league.
Troy, your top five?
Liverpool 5th, Villa 4th, Arsenal 3rd, United 2nd, City 1st.
Okay, and your bottom three, Troy?
Luton Town. Very hard for me to say this, having met Mick Harford through the summer, but I don't think they've got enough resources. Luton Town, Wolves. But now they're going to have a new manager. Are they going to give them a little bit of money that they don't have, that they weren't prepared to give the previous? And Sheffield United. So Sheffield United 18th, Wolves 19th, Luton 20th.
Lars?
Well now, I've stuck Sheffield United bottom because it seems a bit bad that they're kind of losing their top scorer from last season and Sander Berger now leaving and not a lot coming in and that whole thing. So I'm not sure about that. I have put Wolves 19th. Because they've kind of been mid-table the last two seasons, but the XG numbers have been bad. Like, they had roughly the same XG goal difference as Southampton last year. That seems like not a good situation to be in. And when they then further weaken the team, and Lopetegui kind of leaves, I'm thinking this doesn't smell right. So we're sending Wolves down. And then I had, with a heavy heart, stuck Bournemouth in 18th, which means I think Luton can do it. The Hatters. It doesn't make any sense. It's the most underdoggiest underdogs I think we've had in the Premier League ever. It's not necessarily based on rationality, but the relegation battle is not always rational. You know, Leicester went down last season. Weird things happen. I believe in Luton.
Okay, finally, Dan says, hi, Max, Barry, Dole and the gang. Thank you all for your brilliant work. I've loved the show for years. Never miss a minute. I'd be really grateful if you could give a shout out to my brother-in-law, Jack, who married my sister Ellie last week. Our mutual love of Football Weekly has helped us to bond over the years. I'm delighted the only thing he loves more than listening to the pod is, in fact, my wonderful sister. They're the best partnership since Brian McBride and dear Mancy Camara. See you at the Troxy in November. Thanks for everything, Dan. P.S. If Jack's beloved West Ham end up buying João Palhinha from us this summer, I'll be forced to retract all of these sentiments. Jack and Ellie, Baz, if you could do the honours.
Yeah, congratulations. So am I to understand Jack has married his best friend's sister? Is this what's happened here?
Well, I don't think they're... I think they've become friends since... And they've used Football Weekly as a way as bonding, yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, I wish Jack and Ellie every happiness in a world where, I believe, more than half of marriages that take place end in divorce.
Right,
or separation. But I've every confidence that they'll be in the half that survive and just end up living unhappily together in a house they can't sell, or neither of them can leave because it's in negative equity, or maybe just for the sake of the kids. But anyway, good luck, Jack and Ellie. I'm just bitter and twisted because I'm going to die alone, and that's why I can never bring myself to wish anyone else happiness.
Wish you all the best in a long and happy and healthy life to both of you. Thanks, Dan, for getting in touch. That'll do for today. Thank you, Troy.
Thanks, Max. Great to be back.
Thanks, Lars.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Barry.
Thank you.
Mark Langdon, Jonathan Wilson join us tomorrow to do Liverpool to Wolves. Football Weekly was produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Danielle Stephen.
This is The Guardian.